This is an alert to USA Threat Journal National Situation Update for the week ending Saturday, November 15th, 2014. This week in security news, starting first with Ebola. On Tuesday of this week, Alert USA subscribers were notified via text messages to their mobile devices that the U.S. Embassy in Wellington, New Zealand, along with the New Zealand Parliament and a local newspaper, had each received packages with vials containing small bottles of an unknown liquid, along with correspondence referring to the Ebola virus. As of the time of this report's preparation on Friday, there have been no follow-up reports indicating the results of testing on the liquids. While the U.S. Embassy remained open during the incident, one worker was given a precautionary decontamination scrub-down and the mailroom of the facility closed. Next, listeners will recall that late last month, the governments of Australia and Canada effectively closed their doors to residents of Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea, dramatically curtailing all visa services in a major effort to prevent travelers infected with the deadly Ebola virus from reaching their shores. The move caused bureaucrats within the UN and World Health Organization to spin off the rails, demanding the government of Canada justify their actions. Undeterred, on Monday of this week, the government of Canada again put the safety of their citizens first and announced additional measures. Effective immediately, those individuals traveling from the affected West African countries who have had any contact with Ebola patients, including healthcare workers, will be ordered into immediate and mandatory self-isolation at home or in a designated facility for 3 weeks, and all will be monitored daily for symptoms. Those travelers from the region without known contacts, while not ordered into self-isolation, will still be closely monitored on a daily basis by public health officials for the same period of time. Bravo, Canada. Why take a chance? On Tuesday, President Obama's Ebola czar, Ron Klein, told MSNBC that the U.S. would see additional cases of Ebola in our country, while at the same time mocking state officials like New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, who imposed strict quarantine procedures on returning healthcare workers that exceed the CDC's recommendations. We remind listeners that for several months, Alert USA has been carefully chronicling the disconnect between what U.S. politicians and public health television personalities have been saying about Ebola versus what the scientific literature has documented. This includes last week's report detailing the quiet changes the CDC made to both their formal Ebola case definition as well as the increase in risk factors. In related news, at present, there are just over 2,000 U.S. soldiers in West Africa serving in Operation United Assistance. Most of these troops are currently located in Liberia, with a small contingent in Senegal. Late last week, in a tidbit of news not reported by the mainstream media, Joint Chiefs Chairman General Martin Dempsey announced that the U.S. military mission in West Africa would likely last 18 months and that soldiers would be deployed on average in 6-month rotations. This means that when all is said and done, there is a high likelihood that far more than the original 4,000 soldiers selected for deployment will serve time in the region. Alert USA strongly advises listeners not to become lulled into a sense of complacency by the dramatically reduced level of reporting on the Ebola outbreak, with the exception of the feel-good stories about upcoming vaccine trials and the number of reported cases in Liberia on the decline. Public health and infectious disease professionals predicted such lulls months ago. Following a recent slowdown in case numbers in Sierra Leone, new Ebola infections are again rising dramatically. Additionally, it has been hypothesized that the reduction in the number of reported cases in Liberia is due to the increased understanding of the population that treatment centers, in fact, do not provide treatment at all, but are just places where the infected individuals go to die. As a result, there is serious speculation that the increasing number of sick are simply being cared for at home. If this is in fact what is happening, there should be a new surge of cases over the next few weeks. Listeners are reminded that the reason that 5 of 8 infected individuals in the U.S. have survived is because of the use of experimental drugs, the cross-sharing of blood and derivatives, as well as the ability to accurately monitor and replace lost fluids. Without these first-world capabilities and interventions, the death toll would be greater. Unfortunately, such measures are complicated and prohibitively expensive to implement on such a large scale in such a short period of time within the affected countries. And on Thursday of this week, President Obama quietly issued a memorandum protecting federal contractors hired to address the Ebola outbreak in West Africa against lawsuits for importing the Ebola virus into the United States. In short, if a contractor working in West Africa carries the virus back to the U.S. and infects others, that contractor and their employer are shielded from lawsuits. In related news, late this week it was reported that the Nebraska Medical Center in Omaha will be admitting a surgeon from Sierra Leone who has become infected with Ebola. It is expected that this individual will be transported via one of the specialized air ambulance jets contracted by the State Department and will be arriving in Nebraska sometime either on Saturday the 15th or Sunday the 16th. Alert USA subscribers will be provided additional information as it becomes available. In summary, Alert USA again urges listeners to keep the topic of Ebola on your radar. We are now at the start of flu season, and the government is going to great lengths to make this a non-story while behind the scenes scrambling to prepare a stronger domestic response. This should speak volumes to anyone paying attention. This week we pose a few more questions to ask yourself in order to help keep things in perspective. If Ebola is not a threat, why are more Defense Domestic Ebola response teams being trained? If Ebola is not a threat, why is the Obama administration pushing Congress to quickly approve $6 billion in emergency funding? If Ebola is not a threat, why has the U.S. government just ordered 160,000 Ebola-ready hazmat suits? And as reported last week, if Ebola is not a threat, why is the government suddenly establishing 50 Ebola treatment centers around the country, as well as outfitting and retrofitting many VA medical centers to accommodate Ebola patients? You can find much more in this story, including links to the high points made in this report, a detailed, politically incorrect explanation as to why so many of the dead in West Africa are Muslim, and why Islam is at the heart of the worst Ebola outbreak in history, as well as a host of other news and resources in this week's issue of the Threat Journal newsletter. As always, Alert USA continues to closely monitor developments with this outbreak and will immediately notify service subscribers of changes in its spread to different regions, important notices and warnings by government agencies, or any other major changes in the overall threat environment as events warrant. Shifting next to the Middle East, on Thursday of this week, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Martin Dempsey, told the House Armed Services Committee that more U.S. troops may be needed in Iraq for, quote, a long and difficult fight against the Islamic State. He went on to say that more complex operations in Iraq, such as efforts to retake Mosul or to secure the Syrian border, may require deploying American military advisors in combat roles with Iraqi soldiers. Quoting General Dempsey, "We are certainly considering it." Listeners should be aware of how congressional testimony at this level works. In most instances, when senior defense and intelligence officials come before Congress for regularly scheduled briefings, there is a public session, then a closed, classified section where the real details are discussed. In addition, well prior to such hearings, written testimony has already been submitted and there are a few surprises for either side. Members of Congress have a good idea of what the military officials will be stating on the record, and the military officials have an excellent idea of what questions they will face. Further, open sessions are often used to dribble out pieces of information to the public, particularly on controversial topics, so as to allow those revelations to normalize before the larger bombshells are dropped. These are standard techniques in communication science and public relations and are practiced throughout government. With this in mind, for General Dempsey to have stated in open session that defense officials are quote-unquote considering sending additional advisors and that they may have a direct combat role, this almost certainly signifies that such a decision has already been made and deployments are already in the works. Watch for an announcement about the deployment of additional soldiers to the region in the coming weeks. Everyone within the defense and intelligence communities knows that there is no possible chance of winning a counterinsurgency operation and defeating the Islamic State using airstrikes alone. Further, everyone also knows that the Iraqi military is not yet able to handle complex, sustained ground operations independently. At some point, well-trained forces will be essential to winning this war, if in fact this is the intended goal. And in a brief update on Russia, tensions between the U.S., NATO, and Russia are at their highest point since the end of the Cold War and appear to only be getting worse. Countering increased U.S. and NATO activity along Russia's border over the last 12 months, the Russian government has been increasing the number of surveillance and training flights at the edges of U.S. airspace as well as that of other NATO members. On Wednesday, the heat was turned up even more when Russia's defense minister announced that Russia will be sending long-range strategic bombers on regular patrol missions around the globe, including from the Arctic Ocean to the Gulf of Mexico. Quoting Defense Minister Shoigu, "In the current situation, we have to maintain military presence in the Western Atlantic and Eastern Pacific, as well as the Caribbean and the Gulf of Mexico." According to the Pentagon, Russia has not previously flown actual bomber patrols over the Gulf of Mexico, though as previously reported by Alert USA, Russian attack submarines have in fact been detected in the Gulf. Further, as we reported back in July, Russia has inked a new agreement with Cuba to reopen a powerful electronic surveillance station near the city of Lourdes, located approximately 20 miles south of Havana. Before it was mothballed in 2001 due to a closer relationship with the U.S., The station was Russia's largest signals intelligence facility abroad, measuring 28 square miles in size and hosting upwards of 3,000 intelligence, military, and engineering personnel. You can find much more on this story in this week's issue of the Threat Journal newsletter. In travel security news, listeners are reminded that in addition to the new U.S. government-issued worldwide caution, the U.S. State Department this week issued an updated travel warning for Syria, bringing to 44 the number of locations around the world specifically identified as posing significant risks for U.S. citizens. If you are planning travel abroad this coming holiday season, even to such common locations as the Caribbean, Mexico, or Europe, now more than ever, be smart about it and regularly check the U.S. State Department's travel website where information can be found about the security situation at your destination. This has been an Alert USA Threat Journal National Situation Update for the week ending Saturday, November 15th, 2014.